Hello, welcome to our web radio, Radio Evolve, web radio for consciousness and culture. And I'm very happy for you, Kit Johnson, to join us today for this dialogue.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. You are from Denmark and a dancer and choreographer who worked in Denmark, but also worldwide with solo performances that also got many recognitions and awards. And also you have a dance collective, a group, X Act, I think is the name.
It's not exactly a group. It consists of me, a
Okay.
producer, a light designer, and a composer.
Oh, okay.
And whenever we need or request other performers, we're gonna invite specific performers to work with us. But we don't
Okay.
have like a ongoing company. We don't have that. But
Yeah.
we have a collective of people who are training together. That's something different.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Great. And maybe to start our dialogue about your work, about your experience as a dancer in these different fields, different ways, maybe just to start how you became interested in dance, how that interest was sparked for you.
It came very late in my life. I came out of a sports family and sports environment. I was an 800 meter runner for like 12 years, from I was 11 till I was approximately 23, something like that. And in my 20s, beginning 20s, I started studying sports science in university. And in there, we had a guest teacher. Who was a choreographer from New York, Stephen Fand, and he was working with us for 1 week, and that was like a revelation for me. He worked with technique in the morning, improvisation in the afternoon, and it was the improvisational part that sparked me totally. So I started taking classes and going to Copenhagen. I stayed in another town, like 3 hours away from Copenhagen. So I went for classes in the weekend, workshops in the weekends, and in the end, I took leave from university and I never came back. And that was me. And by then, I was 24. It's a pretty late starter. And that also means that I didn't want to choose to go to school. At that point, there was no professional education in Denmark. I would have to go abroad, which a lot of Danes did. But I felt I had enough of schools. So I did it a different way. I stayed in Paris for a long time. I stayed a bit in Berlin, a little bit in New York, took a lot of classes and workshops, and learned that way. And I would say back then, there was also not this big gap between professionals and amateurs or semi-prof. It was accessible for a newcomer to actually go and take classes for professionals. I would be in the back being the fool, but I learned a lot. Yeah. And that means also at that time, it was easy to be picked up by someone who said, okay, we need someone for a small role in this performance. Do you want to join? So soon I was already working, maybe not being paid, but I was working in a way professionally. As I try to educate myself as a dancer.
And in that process, how did you find your own style, your own direction? You said improvisation was what sparked your interest, but I also understood that you trained a lot of different dance techniques or methods or ways of dancing. How did you find your path there?
I mean, the thing is that I came to dance with a body which was really, really strong, being a runner, but very stiff and not very delicate in movement quality. So I knew I had to sort of reinvent my body. I had to unlearn a lot of things that I learned or find a way to transform them into a different kind of body, what can I say, somatic structure. And for this, I realized that I needed more information than just one style of classes. And I was very lucky and very thankful to have a kind of mentor Jean-Louis Badet, who is a French sonographer, and he lived in Denmark at that point, and he was very good, and he understood me. He read me and said, "Okay, this and this young choreographer, go and work with that person. Take those classes. Don't go there. Don't go there." So he helped me a lot in the years where I spent in Paris to take the classes that he thought would develop me the most, and that was really diverse. And I think he was right. Then through that, I started working at one point with Mark Tompkins, American French choreographer, who has a great approach to improvisation. I took his classes and was in was taking part in a couple of his works, and he left me the space, like he left the space for all the performers to create material, and then he would frame it. And that was a great learning process for me, and a great step to actually realize, okay, I can create material that can be used in a artistic way on stage or in en situ or whatever it was. So gradually through this way, I realized, okay, this is me. I can do something. And then of course I think when you have a body that's not sort of meant to be a dancer originally, and you did a lot of other trainings, you have to also focus on what is your strong point of departure. Don't try to create a ballet dancer out of that body, because it's never going to work. Try to see what's the speciality and then develop from there and open the vocabulary from that point of departure.
And what do you mean by material when you just said creating the material that could be used in a
Choreography.
choreography? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And did that lead you also to then go deeper into solo performances? Because you did a lot of solo performances that were quite known or successful, you could say, or received, and as a very special way to embody solo dance. How did that lead you to that?
Actually, it's I have to give the credit to the musician that I'm still working with, Sture Eriksson, a Swedish musician and composer who is now 71 years old, and we're still collaborating. Because he said to me, "You have to do something solo. We have to try. I want to work with you. Let's make a laboratory. Let's go into studio, start from scratch, improvising, see what comes." And I was like, "My God, can I do that? Is that possible?" But he pushed me, and then I was gonna I had to teach in a some kind of what high school. You don't have that in other places than in Denmark, but it's a kind of school for culture for grown-up people. I had to teach there. They asked me to do a performance, and I talked to the musician. He says, "Let's go, let's do it, let's do half an hour." And that went so well. So I said, okay. But I was pushed there. I didn't dare to go there myself.
So it started more from the improvisation side than having, for instance, some topic or some investigation that you want to embody, but it was improvisation, and then that unfolded into having also pieces that have a certain focus on a theme or on a certain way of expression.
It started very much with improvisation, and of course that developed into scores, so that when we went to perform on stage, we would individually have different scores that we would relate to each other. And so gradually there was a little bit of more structure. But then also after some years, I felt that this constant search of the form in the moment kept me from going deeper in my mental focus. So I started looking for more strict forms. That means more choreographing. Never counting. It's never a one, two, three, four, but structures that I decided already in order to go deeper in the way that I would execute them. I mean, the improvisational focus is still there to this day. It's still there, but it's in terms of the timing of it, and in terms of the coloratura, the color of it. Yeah, because we always work with live sound, electroacoustics that's being mixed live, and we always work with live light. That means handheld, and that allows us to improvise within pretty fixed structures. And that invited me to, or it sort of met my need to go deeper into the research of how do I perform in the moment. Does it make sense?
Yeah, makes sense. And how do you came into the, how you say, the topics or the experiences that you want to unfold in this performances? I looked at the little, snippets of it that you have on your website, and it's, you're choosing quite existential themes, or also you could say conceptual themes with the evolution of the body or of life. I think in this performance, Rankeführt, I think it's called, if I pronounce it rightly, or about crisis in one performance. How do you, are you drawn to having this kind of existential grappling with who we are as human beings through the body, or what is that? How does that come about?
I highly believe that when we, I mean, the things that we are occupied with as private people in our private life, this has a lot of energy. So if there's something really urgent and something really interesting for you, there's a lot of energy there. So to create a performance from that point of departure has a huge potential to actually also be valuable for other people. And this is in a way my job, to transform what is urgent for me as a private person into something that can be universally, hopefully, to all times and cultures. That's very ambitious. But for other people to be relevant. Because these themes are, all of them, something that's, as you said, existential. So the themes themselves are relevant to everyone. There's a lot of power where it burns, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how is then the process to come to a work? Maybe this work, I think Post Nobils is the work about crisis. How did you come to having this idea or having this inner urge about something that you feel is pressing for you personally, and then find a way towards a performance that expresses this in this way you do it?
Well, it's created, premiered in 2015, and I started working on it in 13. So it's in the aftermath, or aftermath, we are still in the shit, sorry, of the financial crisis and the environmental crisis, the climate crisis, all these global crises connected to the systems that we have been building, they started unfolding. And it started to be serious. And I felt, and I was very occupied and concerned with it. And sometimes, not sometimes, all the times, actually feeling quite helpless in this, like a lot of other people. Because what can I do? What can you do? How can we do? How can we change this? And that frustration led me to think that, okay, let's try to do an artistic work on this theme. And I spent quite a lot of time researching. And researching means reading. Reading books, going to different web pages, I mean online and analog, trying to understand more about the theme scientifically, philosophically, and also artistically. How has other people throughout time been working with the idea of crisis? And also psychologically. Because we all know crisis from our private life. And I found a lot of the mechanisms are the same, disregarding if it's a psychological path of how to solve a crisis or how to deal with a crisis, and then moving into the financial, into the environment, etc. It has some steps that are so alike. So I did all this research. I was writing the concept, and we got the finances to actually go into studio. And what I always do is that I try to be really prepared, but from a very mental, cognitive point of departure. Then I leave it aside. I go into the studio and I see what comes. I trust very much the fact that what comes has to come. You know, it comes. Just waiting for it to come. And then I look at it and I work. And then in after some weeks, some actually in this specific performance, it was quite weird because after 2 weeks, I had the whole performance. I knew exactly the scenes. I had to work it out. I had to go deeper. I had to understand the connections between the scenes, but everything just came buff, 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 buff. And then, of course, I mirror it. I see what came, and then I mirror it with all my research and see does it make sense or am I on a different path, you know? But it did make sense. And sometimes I could explain really clearly to myself why it made sense. Other times I couldn't. But I felt deeply that it makes sense and I don't need to understand everything, but the scene has to be there. I trust very much this kind of, you know, we get what we should get somehow. So we continue working on that. And simultaneously, the Sture Eriksson, the composer, we're working parallel always. And then sometimes we meet in the studio to see how does our different findings relate? Can they relate? So we were like in and out of studio. Research on the floor, etc. So this is basically the method that I always use, I think, for the work.
It's interesting you saying that you know that something is right or is appropriate without maybe completely understanding it. Is that a kind of inner sense that you developed of intuition or sensing in the body or in your presence that this is how you say the right path or the is embodying the topic that you were working with?
It's really difficult to nail from where does this come. And I think it comes from the whole thing. You know, it's and I trust it. I just must say that I trust my gut feeling that if something feels right, it's right. And I don't always necessarily need to understand on a cognitive level why does it work. Yeah. I cannot explain it better than that. Yeah.
And with this performance, Ranke, if I said that right, because I was quite impressed how you were somehow embodying a certain trajectory of life from more primitive to standing up and somehow it even a little short video had an impact. Did this came about the same way with this kind of research and that's how you work with this.
That's how I work with this. But I would add to the process of creating Rankefull that I also worked a bit with body mind centering, Bonnie Bainbridge Cohen's philosophy and practice around, how can I say, about brown body. I worked with a German practitioner called Regine Biermann aus Münster. And I took some workshops with her, and I also invited her to Copenhagen to do a workshop here, because one part of BMC, body mind centering, is also dealing with the developmental patterns in the body. And this method gave me new tools to go deep into experiencing my own body. So I would say that this also plays a great role in this research that I did. So it was not just the archive books research that I did on evolution, but it was also a physical one, somatic one based on BMC.
And your intention with this was to somehow research and express this kind of developmental paths that are in that are kind of inscribed in our body, or yeah.
That's true. I mean, I think the spark is, I think everyone is somehow interested in where do we come from. And I always found it very touching that we are all nature. And is it possible? Do we ha because in our development and evolution, we have traces in our body. Is it possible to open the memory of those stages that we have been living through in our evolution? That's again very ambitious. But I think I really highly believe in that if we reach for the impossible, we stretch the borders of the possible. So I was trying to see, is there a body memory in me from all these stages? So this is one spark, which is very much about sensation. Yeah. Another spark is, of course, that in order to change the world that we're living in, we need to really recognize that we are nature and we are part of the big system and not separate. We are animals. We have to start behaving responsible towards other species. Yeah. Anyway, and the plants. I'm a big fan of plants. They're everywhere. Anyway, and another thing was that actually in those years, there were people starting to question the idea of evolution again. Yeah. I was performing also this work in Faroe Islands, and they are part of Denmark, Faroe Islands, and there's a lot of strong Christianity in those islands. And those years, there was a lot of discussion about, well, man is made by God, you know. And there was discussion about, can we still, I mean, we shouldn't teach to the kids in school that it's not God that made man, etc. And the same voices we heard from the States. So I thought, okay, it is maybe also time to look into that in my work.
And in the solo performances also you have one, it's called drive or
Drift or drive.
drift or drive, right, which is about the female body and
Not
sexuality.
necessarily. It's about drives, what drives us, and what also about what is heritage. Because we inherit a lot of our drives. What is important? It's not just about sexuality. It's very much about what drives us in the world. How do we make our choices? What are we looking for? What are we fighting for? So I did, it was actually two performances, one with 50 people on stage, looking into how the drives work in the dynamic of crowds. I mean, we are gregarious animals. We exist in crowds. And how does it work in crowds? And then how does it work in the solitary body? I did the solo for that part.
And that came from that question, what drives us and how we can understand that deeper.
Yeah, it came, you know. I'm also very sort of puzzled about, you know, war. Where does it come from? How can we, not how can we, but why are we repeating this kind of, in a way, totally dysfunctional, not good for anyone, behavior of war? So I did a lot of research into that. What drives us? Those years also there was a lot of discussion in Denmark about the foreigners. Speaking about the foreigners, like them and us, and this separation, where does it come from? What is it that drives us to make community that includes some but excludes others? Yeah. So it's drives in that way. I know that some people think primarily of it when they hear it as this Freudian sexuality, how can I say, drive. But for me, it's much more, it's bigger than that.
And in your performances, you make yourself quite vulnerable. I mean, you really, when you watch it, I mean, when I watch it, I feel you really go in there in a very with a lot of presence and intensity. Is there a certain state of mind you enter in this performance, or how does it feel to do this? How is it, is there a certain kind of awareness that you bring yourself in or brought in by doing this, or how is that for you?
I think for everyone who performs, and maybe specifically for those who perform solo, because you have to carry everything. You cannot let your, there's nobody else there to help you. We work with this sort of multiple focus, which is both very technical, practical, and something else. So I have to be aware of space all the time. Where am I in space? Where is the light? And how is the light changing? Because we do the manual light always, that means in different spaces work the light works in different ways. Sometimes Mogens Kiempf is the light designer that I worked with for many, many, many years. So when he does a transition, maybe he lingers. Because this looks different. This is nice, this is interesting. And I have to be attentive to that because and then I have to respond to that. Do I linger also, or do I decide to go? So there's the space, there's the light, there's the sound, which is live and a bit different every time. So the connection between us is really important. There's the choreography that I'm attending to. Where am I according to the plan? Yeah. There's the audience. Audience is very important. Which kind of audience? If you, it's two different performances. For instance, I played Ankefu, the evolutionary work, in Faroe Islands. And I played it for a grown-up audience. And then the day after, I played it for a lot of youngsters between maybe 14 and 17. They came in with their popcorn, with their phones, and chit-chatting away. And we knew exactly, we knew we cannot perform this the usual way because it's very slow. It has a lot of transformations. So the musicians started like with a with big volume and really aggressive, and they lip it up. And I performed much more like cartoonish. That means I didn't linger in the transitions. I went for the figures. The performance was like 10 minutes shorter. But that was the way I ne we needed to change the performance in order to serve that audience. Then in the same tour, I performed in New York in St. Mark's Church, St. Mark's Church, for a very sort of elite audience, 50 people. And I could linger all the time I wanted in the transitions. And this you have to feel in order to, and this is maybe also when you say intensity and presence, this kind of presence where you really try to tune in, what does this specific audience needs this moment in this space? I can continue, maybe there's more points, but it's really a multiple spectrum of focus that you need to put into play. When I say other things, there's also the what drives you? What is the image? What is the intention from the original concept that actually drives you to do this? So you don't how can I say, abandon the roots of that work, which is, it has to be deeply rooted in the concept that you're working with. So this is also at play, no? It's a lot of things.
But as you're saying, it's not like a kind of fragmented going through categories, but more kind of presence that you learned also in the practice.
And it's a global focus. And then, of course, there's never one point of balance where everything is equally distributed, you know, your presence. It's always like this. But the more experienced you are, the less, how can I say, differences. It's not like this shift, it's a small shift from one part to the other. But of course, sometimes you get trapped into, wow, this space is interesting. It does something different. And then you're get lost a bit on a track, you know.
And we talked about the connection to the audience. How is that for you, and the relationship to the audience, and what do you want to transmit or communicate or inspire with the audience in doing this?
I mean, the point of departure is again the theme, the concept. And I don't want to make an didactic piece of art, but I would like hopefully to spark thinking and to spark the somatic reaction in a way that's connected to my point of departure, the concept. But I work very abstractly. You will also have seen that from the videos. So it's not for me to transmit a specific story. It's to offer a frame where people have space to read into it what they need to read into it. I make sure always to give a program that explains the concept and gives some hints about some of the researchers, but that's all. Yeah. And then I hope, of course, that we are going to meet, because every meeting between audience and performer is unique. Of course, then both parties need to want to meet for it to happen.
And then you are doing a whole other body of work. At least that's how it seems, with the site-specific works that you've done in many places. And as I understand, then also with different dancers or artists that you're cooperating with, and you call them Merendum, I think.
Zwischenraum auf Deutsch.
Yeah, Zwischenraum,
Ja.
right?
Auf Englisch gibt es nichts. Zwischenraum doesn't exist in English language because Zwischenraum, it's a space with no name. It's a space between named things or places or spaces, yeah? And in English, you don't have that space between spaces. Because I mean, there's different reasons. I have a long story with the site-specific way back to the 80s when I worked with Mark Tompkins, because he was also or is very occupied by that. So I learned a lot from him. And it always intrigued me that I was being pushed in my way of thinking. I was being pushed in my somatic abilities from specific spaces, and spaces would do different things to me. A black box, the theater, it can also be treated, of course, site specific. Every site is specific, but it is designed to accommodate sort of a lot of things that can be created in a studio and just transported there. So I appreciated being in environments that had resistance. I had to work really hard to find ways to work with them for it to make sense. Yeah. So I was always intrigued by it. And when at one point we had a festival in Copenhagen, a friend of mine created that festival. I was part of it. And he stopped doing that. And I thought, okay, I have to do it. Instead of complaining about what is not there, what I am missing, I have to create that. So that's one part of it. And the other part is that some of the things I want to explore, I cannot do it because I am I am this person.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you need, maybe I need a musician, maybe I need a spoken word artist, a visual artist, a circus person, whatever. So with actually curating works from different artists, I get to explore how the site specific and how different themes can be opened from a perspective that I would never be able to touch because it's not in my skill box. So it's a huge privilege to be able to do this. I always try to curate artists that are interesting, interested in this kind of platform of exchange. They meet each other and they meet me, and then together and individually, people start creating from a specific place that I curated for them. I offered them, and if they say yes, they're in. And in a specific community, a frame of themes that belongs to that community, because I've been researching that. And then we explore it together. That's super exciting.
And how you approach that process? You said you're researching the community. Is that also kind of similar? You're doing research about a place, a city, or a part of a city, or a natural landscape, or can you say a bit more to that process?
I have a very simple mapping method. Super banal, but it works. I call it the walk, the talk, the archive dive. That means I start, I choose a neighborhood. It comes from the urban practice. It doesn't come from nature. I've been doing things in nature, but it's really rooted in urban practices. Anyway, so I choose a neighborhood, and the first thing I do is walk. And I do it in a little bit of a dérive. You know, the situationists had this practice of dériving. That means they would walk with no aim. They would walk where their nose would take them. They would get lost. And they would generate artistic material out of that practice. Sometimes it would be durational, several days, a lot of alcohol and other stuff involved. Sometimes it would be very short. Anyway, so I would expose myself to this idea of getting to know a neighborhood through my body. What kind of impressions does it leave in my central nervous system and in my body and in my mind? This is first step. Then the talk, it can happen spontaneously or it can happen like in a derive way that I talk to people I meet, or I go to a bar or a shop or sit on a bench with someone. I start to open conversations with the people living there. Or it can be organized in the way that I try always also to nail who has a lot of information in this neighborhood. Maybe it's the librarian because the library is a kind of cultural house for the youngsters. Maybe it's the grocer around the corner, maybe it's a cafe, maybe it's a policeman or whatever. And I set up a meeting with them. And I ask them a lot of things about the neighborhood, gather as much information as possible. And then there's the archive dive, and that's, I think the word says it. I dive into archives, physical archives, or into the internet. Or into books. And with the walk, the talk, the archive dive, all together, I gather lots of information. History, architecture, geological information, what are the future plans from the municipality in this place? What are the mythologies, the fictive mythologies and the non-fictive mythologies? How do people perceive each other? How is the demographic tissue of things, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? It's huge. And I spend a lot of time on that. I share that with the artist, and I also invite them with the knowledge that I already gained, but to continue the search. So we try to, and that's why the title, Nutrition Raum, we try to go into the cracks. We try to cast light on the forgotten, the lost, the secret, the taboos, the garbage, whatever is in the cracks of a neighborhood. And we treat it gently. We want to give empowerment to the community. We want to make them love their place again and take ownership and go for changes if they want changes. So it's not about. It's not a hit and run. It's actually very gentle what we're trying to do. Sometimes we involve community members in the actual artistic works. Sometimes we, and it's created with them. Sometimes we just ask them to give us information and we work on that. Sometimes we ask them permission to use the spaces. And they're usually very proud always when we appreciate where they live or what they own, you know? So it's every time it's a bit of a different connection, but I try to find out what makes sense here. It's not about go, you know, we could stay in our habitat and do beautiful art and that's it. But how can we do something that makes sense in a neighborhood? Often also I ask them, is there something, a work that's being needed? Copenhagen, for instance, we were in a place where there was a playground and they needed to bring in a lot of, I don't know what this is called in German or in English. When you put something on the ground, so it's a little bit softer for the kids to fall on, and it's like wooden small things. And it's a huge physical work, and there was no truck that could enter that place because it's surrounded by gardens. They say, okay, every day we have a performance. We'll bring the audience and give them this task to bring material. So by the end of it, we have brought all of it. So there's, if there's a little something we can actually contribute with, so it's not just about using their place, we try to do it.
And how do you come from gathering all that information then to the performance that you want to bring in there? Because I saw you also using all kinds of ways, also costumes or different ways also to make the body into some kind of ex representation of something, yeah, with costumes or masks or something. How do you come to that work that you then want to do there?
I mean, the essential thing is the curation of the artist. Of course, if I realize that sometimes I do works myself, but more and more as the older I get, I think it's too much to do a work myself and organize the whole thing and design the overall structure, you know? So I leave it to the artist to do the actual artistic work. But for instance, let me see. In this place in Denmark in Sydhavn, it's called South Harbour, where there was this playground I talked about, small gardens and houses in the gardens. It's a very special community, which is actually illegal. But everybody knows it. And it's like, it's not the, we can bring people there. It's fine. I wanted to do something in the houses with the local people who lived there. I wanted to have very small groups of audiences, 4 people at a time. So I found an artist who lived in Germany, Mille Dalgaard, who was born there, who grew up there, and she just moved back to Copenhagen. Didn't live in that place, but her parents lived in that place, and was deeply connected. So ask her if she could do it. And she did it, and it was a beautiful work. So she would actually ask the She would try to, she made a workshop, everybody was welcome. And after the workshop, it was clearer for the community what she would ask for them. So some people say, yeah, we want to do it. Some people say, oh no, it's too much time or whatever. And then she would ask them, what would you like to share with 4 guests visiting your house? And so different what came out.
Mm
So people would sometimes share something from their past. One woman had been living in India, and her first husband, an Indian man, was a master of an specific kind of Indian dance. I don't remember the name of it. And she, at that point, she was around 75 years old. So she would take out her old costume and she would dance for us. And
Mm.
she would show us a Bollywood movie where they used this dance style, and we would have tea in her house. Other people would be reading something to people that really made impression on them. Another person who was a very old lady in her 80s, who was a founding member of that illegal community, she would tell them the whole path of how they occupied, how they squatted the place originally, what it was in the old days, and what it is now. So that was very didactic, but this is what she wanted to share. So I'm just trying to say that in the curation of the artist, there's all, I match this with what I've been mapping, and I give them a quite often a quite specific task. And most of the time they're in because they're intrigued by it, and this is how it unfolds. Is that an answer to your question?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, what I'm getting is also you're creating with this curation also a certain a frame or structure in which then also unexpected things happen. Or you know, like you said, and then in every house it is something different, and also it sounds like you also want with this work also create connection between people. How do you see that as part of the work, that there is a certain, because it's an unusual thing, it's art, and it's an unusual interaction than everyday interaction. And how do you see that being able to create maybe a connection or a communication between people that is meaningful or relevant?
I don't know, I just try to do I think it's just using, it's using my social skills. And I'm never trying to force anyone. I'm trying to invite. And if something comes, something comes. And then I'm trying to facilitate what came and see how it can be shared. And if nothing came, then we're leaving it. Like that, you know. We also get, you know, there's failures also. I remember one part we did 2 3 years ago in the nature beach side in Northern Jutland in February. Super, super cold, super windy. It was the ultimate winter experience. And one of the artists, I asked her to work with local people. And she's a theater director, and she wanted to work with the stories of the place because there's been a lot of, it's a place very rough on the northwest coast of Denmark. So traditionally, people are fishermen, and traditionally, a lot of people are lost on the in the sea, drowning, dying, blah blah. And also, it's a hub for Norway between England and Norway, so. Traditionally, also there's a lot of people's a lot of boats destroyed there because of rough weather and blah blah blah. Many stories and many graves very close to. She wanted to explore all that, and she wanted to work with a local choir in the church, from the church. And she started working with them, and they were super excited and blah blah blah. And then she told them, "We're going to do it outdoors in February." And they all stepped out. I think it was also because they were, I mean, they were 40 plus of age. Many of them were simply afraid for their voice, for their health, for their, they were super scared when they heard it. So of course we drop it. And she ended up working with young people from, again, this kind of cultural school for adults, but adults means from 18 plus. So she had a group between, they were between 18 years and 28, maybe something like that. She worked with them. They were okay to go there. So, you know, sometimes, and if we feel it doesn't work, then we drop it. We find something else. And so it's just trying to be, to use your social skill and be reasonable. Yeah.
And every time an experiment also.
Yeah.
But I read this what you said about doing something in a park. I don't know where that was, but was with homeless people or a park where there were people that are, you could say, on the fringes of society, and something from you doing a work there, something also happened with them in connection to the art. I found that quite moving to see how also art can facilitate, you know, meetings that are normally, yeah, don't have happen so often.
There's one little story that's really dear to me. It was a really little bit of a rough area in Copenhagen, and we had to go. Maybe that's, I don't know if that's what you've been reading. We had to cross a little park, and you know, there's formal ownership and then there's informal ownerships, and we have to respect both of them. Formally, it's a park that belongs to the municipality. Informally, from around 12 noon until the night, and in the night, it belongs to the young pushers. It's a drug market. Yeah. So if you have to go there, you have to ask the permission from the municipality, and then you ask the permission from the drug dealers. Because if they don't like you there, don't go there. So we started communicating, and there was specifically one with a little bit more open, you know, but still with a hoodie and sunglasses and difficult to see actually. I said, okay, you can walk there and there. It's okay to walk there, but not there. But don't take any photos. No, fine. We'll ask everyone not to take photos. We do that anyway. And we'll cross the park and go into an old squatted house that is actually in our cultural house. They have a little cafe, and we would end the performance there. And then every time we passed with the audience, we had 20 audiences, they sort of turn away a little bit, but every time I say hello. And then one day I came to prepare things, I ask him, I see him, and I ask him, do you want to join as an audience? No. And then the day after I came again and said, there is actually a free space tomorrow if you want. Okay, I come. And he joined as an audience with his hoodie and his sunglasses. And then when we ended in the cafe after, people are talking, we give them a beer, and it's a very cozy moment. He would take down his hood, he would take off his sunglasses. I see him chatting away with different audiences, and he took ownership. He talked to them about the park, not about his drug dealing, they don't know, but about the park and the history of the house. And he was only like 17, 18, something. He went to school just next door because some of the other audience members had questions and they were just asking, you know, wonder if this, wonder if that. And he took charge and he took ownership. This was his place. This is his hood. And I found that really, really nice. Course, then we start to talk to him about different youth educations and we try to sort of, ah, you have to get out of that shit, you know? We start to know him enough that we can say things to him. I don't know what happened after. But there's this opening. This is what art can do, I think, that we, because it doesn't go there with an agenda that people actually can recognize. You know, it's not the police, it's not the social worker. It's not the teacher, it's not the whatever, you know, who has a specific agenda. We have a weird agenda that's difficult to read. And that might give possibilities for different dialogues and different meetings. And we're not judging. We're not judging the drug dealers. We're not judging the homeless or anyone or the rich guy with the big car around the corner.
Right. And as I understood, you also do a lot of education at this point, teaching younger dancers. What from your experience do you want to communicate?
I mean, first of all, I would say I've been teaching since I was 14 years old, because in the sports, when you reach a certain level, they ask you to teach the youngsters. And I realized I love teaching. So when I entered the dance, as soon as I knew something, I it felt how can I say strong enough in my body for me to teach it, I would start teaching. It's a great way also to earn a bit of money when you're a young dancer. So I've been always teaching, but I'm not specifically interested in dance teaching, or it's not young dancers. I mean, I teach very cross-disciplinary. What I like to teach is movement and artistic research that crosses borders. So like the community, the collective that I'm part of, that we do a training 3 times a week that's open for everyone. I tend to be the oldest, but we have a few other people who are 60 plus. And I think the youngest, Dita, she was there the other day, she's like 17. So it's all this mass of people. And it's amateurs, semi-professionals, professionals from circus, dance, music, visual arts, normal people, people who want to lose weight. I mean, everyone. This is what I enjoy.
And then you do certain practices and certain movement experiences together.
Yeah, in this in the training we do in this collective, it's a 2.5 hour workout. It's very physical. We also have sometimes some sports people who do it. It's cardiovascular, it's flexibility, it's muscular stamina, and it moves and moves and moves and moves. It's a lot of jumping, running. And the thing is, you can do it with all levels because in its structure, it's super simple. Then, if you have a mixed class, you can add more advanced things for the people who are advanced, or you can strip it down for the people who are less advanced to concentrate on what they are able to do. Yeah. And then I facilitate a lot of creative processes, being a mentor in different artistic constellations, and sometimes giving workshops which are much more artistic and less about movement, but it's about creation. So it's quite diverse also. And the site-specific method, I also teach that.
And maybe as a last question, from your experience, I mean, you have a lot of experience when working with the body and in all this kind of different ways in different spaces. And at the same time, we also live in a quite a digital age, or very much so. And there is this kind of if many people a sense of kind of finding new way to embodiment or relationship to the body. How is that for you with working so directly, intimately with the body? What do you think, or why do you think, or do you think it is important to learn to sense, to read the body in a different way in this times, or how do you see that the importance of being in relationship with the body?
Language is a funny thing. We separate body and mind. We are body. The brain is part of the body. It's physical, you know? So without the body, nothing. We would not be here, huh? So of course it's super valuable for people to how can I say, to connect and not disconnect. Because it gives you a grounding. When you're grounded in your body, it's easier to understand what is right and wrong because you can feel it. And it's more difficult to push you over Both physically as well as mentally, if you're standing on your two feet. I mean, the body is how we exist in the world. The body tells you, wow, there's a fire, go away, you know. I'm hungry, I'm gonna eat, you know. Without the body, nothing.
Yeah, and you are exploring the body in this in the different ways, and great to speak with you about that. Thank you very much.
You're most
Very
welcome.
much, Kit Johnson, and thank you very much for listening and watching.
Thank
Thank
you
you.
for having me.